This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number outside the area. And if you're in Baton Rouge, give us a dial at 297-5633. You can reach us by email at talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with Roy Fletcher. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Jim Henderson, the president of the University of Louisiana System. But Roy Fletcher, not only an accomplished political consultant who's been doing his thing for well over four decades, but also a lawyer, a man who knows his way around the courthouse. And yesterday, the FBI raided the Rockefeller Center office and Park Avenue hotel room of President Trump's longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, seizing business records, emails, documents related to several topics, including a payment to pornographic film actress Stormy Daniels, the former Stephanie Gregory Clifford from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. What's your take, Roy Fletcher?
Pretty surprising. Pretty surprising. Attorney-client privilege is a pretty important thing. There are exceptions to it, crime-fraud exception, I think that this one, particularly as it relates to Miss Stormy, is an interesting thing because while the president, and you know me, I'm pretty pro-Trump, but I'm going to say this very clearly. While the president has said that Cohen was not acting on his behalf, that he's his attorney, but he was in that situation, he was not acting in any way for him, for Trump at all. On the one hand, claim he's not acting for him, and on the other hand, claim that he's your attorney and he has attorney-client privilege related to that matter is kind of a difficult stretch there, it seems to me. However, the raid, we don't know what the warrant said, and we don't know what it was with any kind of particularity, what they were after. And we've seen this before, we saw it as it related to Paul Manafort when documents were taken from his home that were attorney-client privilege documents. I'm not sure that there is not a... real attack on attorney-client privilege in the country. I read, and I don't know if this is correct, because I read it on Twitter, but I understand that there was also an FBI raid yesterday of Patton Boggs. Now, I don't know if that is correct or not. I read it on Twitter, and it was not a source news story. And that may have to do with the entire Ukraine thing, too.
Well, the special counsel, according to the New York Times, is investigating a payment made by President Trump's foundation by a Ukrainian steel magnate for a talk 20 minutes during the presidential campaign.
It was in late 15,
yeah,
right.
And the president got $150,000 for a 20-minute appearance that video link to a conference in Kiev. So, what does this mean for the president, if anything? His defenders say that there isn't a scintilla of evidence for Russian collusion. Others say that let's wait and see what Robert Mueller produces.
Well, I mean, those that are waiting to see were salivating at the mouth that it was all coming out a year ago. There's nothing been shown yet. So, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, you die by a thousand nicks, and he's getting nicked up. But at the same time, the president's numbers are going up, and people are, I mean, he tends to be fairly in agreement with the American people, particularly on certain things like trade and things like that. I mean, he apparently had a big win yesterday. So, with China, but so the whole point of it is that the Knicks are what's causing a problem. On the other hand, he is Trump, and people that, particularly his base, and particularly around 42% of the American public, like the way that he fights, and he fights back. So, I don't know ultimately but you just can't keep taking a bunch of little nicks like this.
Well, and it's a question of whether the big nick is coming.
On the other hand, remember, the people that are involved in some of this nicking are also going to get the heck nicked out of them as it relates to the Horowitz report, and that's going to be a very damaging report to the system itself. I mean, to the Bureau and so on, the DOJ. It's going to cause some real problems, apparently.
877-217-5757. Is President Trump on the brink of indictment? What will Robert Mueller do? Will the president fire Robert Mueller? He hasn't ruled that out, but he has not done it yet. And yesterday, Mueller got pretty close to the fire, and three raids, not one, but three raids of attorney Michael Cohen, who says he paid $130,000 to the Pride of Baton Rouge, Stephanie Gregory Clifford, better known as Stormy Daniels, during the waning days of the campaign for president in October of 2016, apparently to keep quiet about something the president says never happened. Does that make sense, Roy Fletcher?
Well, it makes sense first of all, no, obviously, commonsensically, it doesn't make sense on the one hand. On the other hand, it does buttress the notion that Cohen and Trump were not communicating about that. I mean, so that you can have it either way. The facts are just going to have to show what the deal is there. I will say that was not Mueller that did the raid, and it was not him behind. He wasn't the authority in that. It was the Southern District of New York's U.S. Attorney's Office.
Julie in Hundred Oaks. Julie, you're on the air with Roy Fletcher. Welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Thank you. Just a quick clarification to what Roy said about Patton Box being raided as well. I believe I read in the Washington Post that Michael Cohen was like basically renting space from the Squire Patton Box law firm. So I think that's the same raid that he read about.
All right.
That's all.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it.
I wasn't sure. I just wasn't sure.
Well, Cohen is a man who's been with the president a very long time, and the president yesterday reacted angrily to this raid. And
he says
these people are a bunch of Democrats. Now, Mueller is a Republican. And if we're going to tag people, his daughter and his son-in-law are Democrats, purportedly. So does it matter which party is investigating? I suspect Ken Starr is a Republican. Did that matter during the Clinton impeachment?
Well, yeah, it did. Sure did. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, career people you hope call balls and strikes, and that they're umpires and referees and not protagonists. What I think the president's reacting to, if I could channel him a little bit, is this the entire scenario of what has come out of FBI, what has come out of DOJ, and what is likely to be in this Horowitz report. I think that's what he's responding to. And so as he thought that when John Brennan came to him with the dossier along with Comey, and then it was leaked the next day, and I think they thought it was Brennan who leaked it, hell, he thought the CIA was after him. So I mean, there's a certain amount of credibility on both sides of this thing in terms of what people are being said. I don't think it matters which party, but I do think that it matters which side. Apparently there are sides.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. And, of course, this is happening as the events in Syria are dominating the world stage with poisonous gas being used.
Yeah.
And now the president deliberating action. Last year there was a bombing of an airfield in Syria after a similar gas attack. What do you think about the president having to make this call amid all this noise in the background?
I don't think that's a problem, because I think, you know, they're going to, I mean, Mattis and all of them are focused on what they have to do there. They're going to give him alternatives and help him along with alternatives. I think that he'll be fine with that. And Bolton is now there and so on and so forth. So I don't have real concern. I have a concern about what we do. Clearly, everybody should. But you know, that thing can't go unanswered. One thing I would go back to is the Ukraine thing, because it's interesting that this was the same, that $150 was not paid to Trump, it was paid to the Trump Foundation. Now, why do I say that's important? Because this same actor in Ukraine paid $25 million to the Clinton Foundation while Clinton was the Secretary of State. And Doug Schoen and others were the lobbyists for him in that department.
877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and we'll return after this 90-second pause with more from Roy Fletcher on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Sasha Gabashaw is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Roy Fletcher, the esteemed political consultant and lawyer, is with us for a little while longer discussing national, international, and we're going to get some state activities as well. There is a governor's election 1 year, 6 months, and 2 days from today. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I think President Trump is the most criminally corrupt and most morally bankrupt and mentally unbalanced president ever to serve. How can Trump say there was no collusion with the Russians when I believe the special prosecutor has documented more than 70 contacts with Trump campaign officials and Russian officials? Now, if that is not suspicious enough to have an investigation, I don't know what is.
All right, Roy Fletcher. It appears a lot of people very close to the president had some connections to Russia.
Exactly who? Jeff Sessions, when he met the Russian ambassador.
Well, how about Paul Manafort? How about Carter Page? How about Roger Stone?
Carter Page, come on, man.
How about Michael Steele?
Let's talk about Carter Page.
It's nonsensical to say that these people didn't have connections to Russia.
The question is, was there collusion?
Correct.
Not question of whether or not they talked to somebody. Jeff Sessions met an ambassador in his office. Was he not supposed to do that? Carter Page was a business guy. He was in the energy business. He went over there. He wasn't even a player in the Trump campaign. There may be some others, and I'm not going to argue that. But the point of it is that there are at least as many contacts on the Democratic side of this thing as there are on the Republican side of this thing. That's my point.
With Russia?
Yes. Bill Clinton got $500,000. They sold uranium. Come on.
No. The uranium one thing is not analogous to this, Roy.
In what way is it not analogous?
Well, that deal was made before Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State.
That deal was approved by the committee that Hillary Clinton sat on, and Eric Holder was on it, and did not tell that committee that there was an FBI investigation.
Well, the President of the United States made the call on that, and his name was Barack Hussein Obama, not Hillary Clinton. And the man who made the contribution, the several million dollars to the Clinton Foundation, he'd already sold his company when he made the contributions.
So he was still involved in whatever.
But why do Trump and other Republicans, why do they focus on Hillary Clinton rather than defending themselves? Let's say Hillary Clinton is guilty as hell. What does that have to do with the President of the United States?
Well, there's two things. There's two things, and I'll answer that. One is that I don't have a problem defending the president on that. I think that there are questions that need to be answered and never said that they didn't need to be answered. On the other hand, I don't think they're going to amount to anything. Number two, the reason why that Republicans continue to talk about Clinton is because of the difference in the way that the two people have been handled.
You don't think Hillary Clinton's been investigated?
She hasn't been investigated.
You don't think Hillary Clinton's been investigated? Jim Comey, who got fired by Trump, probably cost Hillary Clinton the election.
Well, she probably should have been indicted. But that's not the issue. Well, she wasn't.
Okay.
But wait.
Go ahead.
Okay. But we are just now involved with a criminal a federal investigation of the Clinton Foundation. Just in the last 6 months that started. It's going on, and it may very well be that this uranium connection deals with all of this stuff and not just Trump and not just Clinton.
Well, it's fairly apparent that Vladimir Putin wanted Donald Trump to be president of the United States, not Hillary Clinton. That's fairly apparent. You're going to dispute that, Roy?
No, I'm not going to dispute that. On the other hand, I'm not sure that he cared.
Oh, I think he cared a whole lot. Why would they interfere in our election so much?
Because they were creating havoc, and that was the whole point of it, was to create havoc.
Okay.
And they were on both sides. Remember the Facebook people even admitted that both sides were. But the Russians were playing both sides as it related to their post and their bot operation. They were going either way. They didn't care. If they did that and they did it, there ought to be some people put in jail if they were involved in it. I don't have a problem with that because that's not right.
Okay. Well, we are a year, 6 months, 2 days away from the governor's election in Louisiana. And one of the president's staunch defenders, for the most part, has been John Neely Kennedy. Is he going to run against John Bel Edwards for governor of Louisiana?
You know, that's a big question. And I think that one day he is and one day he's not. And I got a feeling that might be his mind, too. One day he is and one day he's not. I mean, he gets so much national press because of his folksiness. That seems to me to be hard to turn that down.
Well,
but on the other hand, he'd be a heck of a candidate.
Well, yeah, he would be a heck of a candidate, and he might very well end up being governor of Louisiana. You represented
good.
Him.
Yeah.
He has lost elections, but I think Bernie Pinsonat made an astute observation when he said he's learned every time he's lost.
Absolutely, he has. He has, And he changed himself over a period of time. I mean, remember in 2004 he ran as a kind of a liberal Democrat for the Senate, and by 2006 he was a conservative Republican.
But some of his quotes have not been met with applause, and some have been such that people shake their heads. Here's one. Here's Senator John Kennedy saying, "This is Washington, D.C. Politics is in everybody's blood, kind of like herpes." That's John Neely Kennedy.
Yeah, that was a little strong, huh?
Well,
although he did make the point about the Crumitus bill, which was that it was like getting a Great Dane whiz down your leg.
He did. He said that, yes.
Yeah. Might have been some truth to that.
Well, if Kennedy does not run, who runs against John Bel Edwards?
Well, apparently it's Ralph Abraham, the congressman from up around Monroe, Rayville, or wherever that is up there. He has a long way to go and a tall task to do it. I think it's interesting that we're down to essentially those two people talking about it. And I think that's a testament to the governor's numbers. They are pretty decent, and so it restricts the field.
All right, a question from a listener, Tracy, asking is there any possibility we'll have a Edwards Vitter redo?
I don't think so. I don't see how we could. I don't think David Vitter's even interested in it anymore, frankly, and I don't think the Republicans want anything to do with that.
Well, he did only get 44% in this.
That's all he got.
That's
yeah.
Solidly red.
Which was normally what a Democrat gets.
That's right. It was flipped. In fact, yeah. In all the other races, they all went 56-44 the other way.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so the fact that he got 44 just shows that it was a very anemic candidacy.
But the Democrats only have one statewide office, and that's the governorship, and we're facing this fiscal cliff, and it doesn't appear that the governor has any mojo at the Capitol. He doesn't have a...
He's
not dealing a very strong hand.
No.
And so how can Republicans capitalize on that?
Well, you know, I take the position, and people look at me like I'm crazy. I don't know that it's a bad thing that the governor don't have a lot of mojo at the Capitol, because his numbers go, and I've said this to you before on the show, his numbers go up when he's not talking about taxes. They actually go up. People like John Bel Edwards. Maybe it's the best thing that ever happened to him.
877-217-5757. We'll spend a few more minutes with the astute Roy Fletcher, who, as you can hear, has become a solid supporter of one Donald John Trump, who, by the way, got more votes than any candidate in the history of Louisiana, almost 1.2 million in the year of 2016. We're back after this pause for the news on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Roy Fletcher with us for just a few more moments, and then we'll go to the man who heads the University of Louisiana system, Jim Henderson. 877-217-5757 is your number, as always, and Dan in Baton Rouge has been waiting patiently. Dan, you're on the air with Roy. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Mr. Fletcher, should we be concerned that given the Trump playbook of every time things don't go his way, there's a distraction, that with the seizing of the records related to whatever his fixer Cohen's been doing to him, that Trump will now either fire Mueller and or launch a nuclear attack on Syria?
Yeah, only if you're crazy. So so my friend Dr. Henderson's there from Northwestern.
Yes, that's right.
We're
alma mater.
We're both alumni there. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, and he's waiting to talk after you talk, Roy. But Donald Trump, he's a resilient guy. And by the way, the stock market today has reacted so far with a collective yawn about all this stuff. The Dow's up 468 points.
Let me tell you why, Jim. Because China announced last night the easing of a bunch of trade restrictions. The premier of China made a speech last night with respect to that, but about autos and some other things. And so you could say that Trump's having a pretty good day on the trade front.
Well, it was your former colleague James Carville who says it's the economy, stupid.
Well, it may not be anymore, but it was then.
Well, thanks for joining us, Roy Fletcher.
Hey, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
Take care. My pleasure.
See you soon.
Be good, Jim.
You too. Bye-bye. We're joined now in studio by Jim Henderson, the man who heads the University of Louisiana system. It's one of the largest higher education systems in the country, is it not?
That's right. It's one of the top 20 now. I don't know how I follow Roy Fletcher, though. It's going to be quite a challenge
today.
Well,
Jim Henderson is a graduate of Northwestern State University, as is Roy. And, of course, Roy also has a law degree from LSU. But 90,000 students in the University of Louisiana system.
We're actually at 91,500, which is our highest enrollment in 5 years.
You know something that surprised me? I asked, and only 41% male. 59% female.
And that's a national trend. We're seeing more and more women come to universities. I think it's a good thing. We're seeing them now start to come more and more to STEM fields, which is a really good thing. We need more women in those high-paying occupations.
And almost 40% of the 91,500 students are minority students.
Yeah, and that's a big push for us. And we've seen that it's going to be one of the emphasis for us going forward, that when we look at rates of educational attainment, we see that there are some disparities, especially amongst ethnic backgrounds and people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds as well. And so that's a real important push for us. If we're going to be competitive as a state, we've got to elevate all populations in educational attainment.
Well, the University of Louisiana system has the University of Louisiana, Lafayette, ULM, the University of New Orleans, Southeastern, Northwestern, McNeese, Nichols, Louisiana Tech, Grambling. So
we've got nine historic institutions that each has their own identity, their own areas of excellence, their own cultures, and collectively,
every portion of the state is represented.
That's right. And collectively, we are really making the state competitive. That's the mission.
Well, over a third of the students in the system receive TOPS. So how important is TOPS to the stability of the UL system?
You know, TOPS is important to the stability of the system, but more importantly, TOPS is a commitment that the state of Louisiana made to students. And we told students that if you perform at this level academically, then we're going to pay this portion of the cost of your higher education. And in my view, and that's something I've stressed over and over for the last several months. That promise should come with the full faith and credit of the state of Louisiana. We're telling young people that we're making a commitment to you. And so fulfilling that TOPS promise is absolutely an essential outcome from this legislative session. I think we're going to get there. I hope we're going to get there. It's vitally important that we fulfill that promise.
Well, 16,240 students graduated from the UL system last year. 59% of Louisiana graduates came from the ULS system. And you've got people in all facets of education. I'm looking over 1,200 in engineering, over 1,800 in education. I could go on and on. But tomorrow is ULS Day at the Capitol. What happens tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we're going to have a showcase on the front lawn of the Capitol of what I think is the future of Louisiana. It's the promise of the students that we're producing. You know, that 16,200 number is a great number. But I got our presidents together earlier in this year, and we said, guys, what is it that we want to achieve? What's our aspiration? And they didn't disappoint. They came back and said, we're going to produce the most educated generation in Louisiana's history. And it's absolutely important for us as a state, as the nature of work is fundamentally changing. With the rise of technology, you know, advances in technology, the ubiquity of automation, with artificial intelligence, it is changing the very nature of work. And if we're going to be competitive as a state, if our employers are going to be competitive, if our communities are going to be competitive, we have to elevate educational attainment. And having 1,200 students on the front lawn of the Capitol showcasing some of their academic programs, their successes, and again, their promise for the future, I think it's going to have a very positive effect on the decision-making at the Capitol.
Well, what are you trying to convey, though? Are you trying to say we need to keep funding as is, we need more funding, we want you to make sure you don't cut higher education again?
Our request is very, very simple. You see, this year we've been operating a stable budget for the first time in 10 years, and TOPS was fully funded. You believe we're celebrating stable funding? Well, we are. And our request for the legislature is not for more money. It's to fulfill the TOPS promise and to hold us stable. When we have stability that allows our institutions to focus on serving students at a higher level, graduating students that are prepared for a life and career success. So that stability and funding is absolutely essential, plus a policy environment that recognizes we're entrepreneurial engines now. We're no longer state-supported institutions. We have 37% of our state support actually goes to retire unfunded accrued liabilities. So the state funding is essential to retire those mandated costs. But most of our revenues come from students. It comes from the activities of the institution. 75%
tuition
of our institution's resources come from self-generated revenues, tuition fees, and support from employers.
Once again, your number is 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Sasha Kabashaw producing, and our guest for the remainder of the hour is Dr. Jim Henderson. His role as head of the UL system is such that he is in charge of the ninth largest university system in America. It was founded in 1974 as the Board of Trustees for State Colleges and Universities. The name was changed in 1998 to the UL system, transferred five community colleges to the Louisiana Community and Technical College system. And a listener asked about the past of the UL system and asked whether Bobby Jindal was involved. And yes, he was. Before he was governor, he had your job, didn't he?
He did. He had my job for 2 years. And, you know, we've had a list of great leaders that have come through the leading University of Louisiana system. I hope that I'm there for longer than 2 years. It's a dream job for me. You know, leaving Northwestern State when I was president there was a very difficult decision. That's my alma mater, as it was Roy Fletcher's. And when you're the president of your alma mater, that's a very special feeling because you're walking on hallowed ground. But we saw the challenge in the state level in Baton Rouge, and we thought, you know, hey, if we're going to make a difference in the state that we love, my wife Tanya and I decided to relocate back to Baton Rouge and really try to drive performance in a system of institutions that we think is absolutely vital to the future of our state.
Which one of the universities has the highest enrollment?
University of Louisiana at Lafayette has about 19,000 students, but you have Southeastern has about 16,000 students. Louisiana Tech is up 13,000 students. In fact, Louisiana Tech has its highest enrollment since it opened its doors in 1894. Northwestern State has its highest enrollment since it opened its doors 10 years earlier, 1884. Grambling opened its doors in 1901 when Booker T. Washington sent Charles P. Adams up to the Piney Woods in North Louisiana. It's having a resurgence there. And we talk about HBCU rising. There is no public HBCU that has a higher brand identity and valuable brand at the national level than Grambling State. And Rick Gallo has done a phenomenal job of leading resurgence at that institution. And we can make those stories across the state. Each one of our institutions is thriving.
Yeah, well, President Gallo really, he loves his university.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. Has an emotional connection to it. 877-217-5757. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Henderson.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Jim?
Hey, good morning, Paul. Made it easy on you.
Doing good, doing good. Just a question. HBCUs, we have them at some point. They're going to, you know, plateau. Do we have too many universities in the Louisiana system?
That's a great
question. That we can afford.
That's a great
question. I'll take my answer out there. Thank you.
Sure. That's a great question. It's one I get quite often, and we ask that we can afford. You know, we've reduced funding for the University of Louisiana system by $295 million over the last 10 years. At the same time, we're producing 1,400 more graduates a year. We've elevated our graduation rates by 10 percentage points. Mm-hmm. We operate at the lowest cost per student in the entire southern region. We rank 42nd in the nation in per capita expenditures on higher education. And that's an anomaly because it actually counts TOPS funding twice in there. So we actually rank but 45th, 46th. So higher education is not really a cost for the state anymore. It's an investment. And each of these institutions is now supported and driven by the market. And so the survivability of these institutions, the thrivability of these institutions, is directly related to their ability to respond to the markets. And the markets, because we're having a resurgence in enrollments, the markets are saying, absolutely, we need these institutions.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Jim Henderson. Janice in Baton Rouge. Hi, Janice. You're on the air with Jim Henderson.
Hey, Janice.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Henderson, I would like to know, I know there are a lot of important issues going on, but I would also like to know while you're there, why is the University of Louisiana at Lafayette allowed to call itself the University of Louisiana?
All right. Why is that the case?
Well, that's a great question. They're actually not allowed to call themselves the University of Louisiana. The statute that created our system and the rules from our system say that no one can say they're the University of Louisiana or they're UL. Now, their sports branding says Louisiana's Raging Cajuns, and that's where people sometimes make a mistake. But they do not use UL. In fact, they're proud to say they're UL Lafayette.
Well, and it's ULM. And that's Nichols right. And McNeese, they have that option, and Northwestern if
that's
they
right.
want to.
Northwestern right? State University of Louisiana could call themselves Louisiana's Demons, and that's. But we're going to stick with Northwestern up there, I believe.
We'll be back. 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana as we come down the stretch with Jim Henderson, president of the University of Louisiana system. Tomorrow is ULS Day at the Capitol. What time do you get started tomorrow?
The show starts about 11 o'clock. There'll be some performances. One that's really cool, Louisiana Tech is the only graduate program in stage fighting in the nation, and they'll put on a little exhibit of stage fighting. So don't get
stage
surprised
fighting.
if you see a brawl on the front lawn of the Capitol. It's not legislators; it's professionals from Louisiana Tech demonstrating their craft.
I like this. 877-217-5757. Precious in Opelousas. Hi, Precious. You're on the air with Jim Henderson.
Hi, Precious.
Hi, Dr. Henderson. I'm an alumna of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, and when I decided to graduate school, even though I loved school and the system, I had to leave and go to the LSU system because they had more professional schools that were offered. And so my question is, are there any plans in the future for the ULL system to add more professional schools such as public health or a med school or even physical therapy? I'll take my answer off air.
Precious, thank you so much for the question. You know, one of the challenges we have is we don't want to duplicate programs unnecessarily. And so when we have some schools of excellence, and LSU system has some phenomenal professional schools, we also have some professional schools in the UL system. ULM has the state's only public pharmacy school, for instance, and they just developed their doctorate in occupational therapy. When we look at program expansion, it's going to be in those areas of the market where we're underserved. So, you know, you won't see us duplicating a lot of the things that are happening at LSU, but we have seen some movement in possibly developing a doctor of osteopathic medicine program in different places around the state. We want to make sure we're making the best use of the resources we have and we're responding to needs of the market. That's what's going to drive our decisions.
877-217-5757 for Jim Henderson, president of the University of Louisiana System. John in Lafayette. Hi, John. You're on the air with Jim Henderson.
Hi, John.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. My question is quick, and I was just hoping Dr. Henderson could kind of forecast when the system was going to start reinvesting in faculty. We've got a real problem drawing faculty to the state, keeping faculty here, and more, and just as importantly, keeping the faculty that are here not from being demoralized, as we see increase in administrators and administrator salaries. We'd like to see a little more focus on faculty these days. So
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's one of the most pressing concerns that I have at the system level. It was a concern I had at Northwestern State. We do trail our Southern Region peers in faculty pay, and the Southern Region is not necessarily the leader in faculty pay. So when you're the lowest of the low, you've got some challenges. And we're seeing states that are coming in, especially after our faculty that have federal research dollars tied to them, but coming after all of our faculty because they want talent. Our presidents have made a commitment that they're going to reinvest. They're going to find ways to move dollars into faculty pay. It's going to take us a little bit of time. It's time that we start talking with the legislature about strategic reinvestments in our work because it's absolutely vital to the success of our students. But when you think of faculty, faculty are the soul of the university, and it requires our investment in keeping the best and brightest talent we can in our system.
Well, in 2011, the University of New Orleans joined the UL system as the ninth university in the system. Big school, formerly LSUNO and then UNO. How's that transition gone?
You know, they've got the new president, John Nicolo, has been there now, I guess, almost for 2 years, and we're starting to see a resurgence. They're up 35% in admitted students for this coming fall. And when you look at UNO and think of some of its areas of excellence, and from naval architecture to engineering, it sits there on the beautiful banks of Lake Pontchartrain. I'm very bullish on its future there, and I think we've got the right leadership and a great body of students.
Is there any possibility of adding other schools in Louisiana?
You know, it's the first time I've been asked the question if we're going to add schools in Louisiana. You know, people are always talking about structure.
Add to the system.
Yeah, people are always talking about the structure of higher ed in Louisiana. And to be honest, I think that's a misnomer. Structure is not our challenge. Leadership has been our challenge. I think we've got effective leadership at the four systems. Each system has its own mission. And I think we need to be focused on developing talent. And if that focus on elevating educational attainment leads to some structural changes, then I think that's what's going to drive it. But the outcome is developing more talent so we can have a enrich our communities and we can have competitive employers.
Earlier you noted ULM and its pharmacy program. Well, if you want to be a pharmacist, that's where you go to school in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Some people believe we should have more of that, that we have too many colleges offering the same kinds of programs, that we'd be better off if we had one or two schools offering a specific path of education that would be available only at those schools. How do you respond?
I think that was a great conversation to have when the state funded 75% of our operations. But all of these programs now are self-sufficient. They're funded by the market. And so if we have an informed consumer base, the consumer decides with their feet where they're going to go to school. And that's what should drive program offerings. In addition to the needs of communities, the needs of regional economies, something we evaluate all the time, but we've eliminated 380 programs over the last 15 years. I think we're right-sized in terms of our program offerings. Now is where we need to be looking at responding to the needs of markets and elevating educational attainment.
Mm-hmm. 877-217-5757. In our remaining time with Jim Henderson, who heads the University of Louisiana system, and nine universities are in that system in all parts of our state. And tomorrow is ULS Day at the Capitol, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning. And a question from Ari asking, have you lost faculty because of the pressures on higher education funding over the last several years?
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen some surveys from faculty that 65% of faculty were considering moving out of state. One of the great things about Louisiana, it's a nice place to live. It's a low-cost place to live. It has wonderful recreation, has wonderful tourism, the best food in the country. But when you're paying a salary that's not competitive with markets around the country, that's when the pressures start. And so I think we've turned the corner on that. This year of stability means that every one of our institutions gave some level of salary increase to faculty. Now, for most of them, it was just a modest increase, barely enough to cover the increased cost of health insurance. But I think it's a sign of much better days to come. We're focused on responding to that market, in which it means we're going to invest more in faculty salaries. We're going to invest more in keeping that talent in Louisiana.
Stuart in Southeast Baton Rouge. Hi, Stuart. You're on the air with Jim Henderson, president of the ULS, the University of Louisiana System.
Hey, Stuart.
I think it would be proper to introduce Dr. Henderson and as well as you and the audience. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
Doctor, I'm of the impression that four-year institutions want to suppress community colleges to a certain degree from zealously marketing themselves because they will, for lack of better words, rob the four-year institutions of their potential incoming freshman class. Will you be honest and tell us whether this tug of war truly exists? This feedback I've gotten from some community college executives.
That's a great question. As a former community college executive, I think I have something to say about that. I think that our community colleges in general and the Louisiana Community Technical College system is absolutely essential to the future of our state, to reaching these goals of educational attainment. Listen, we've got 1.5 million adults in Louisiana that lack a college credential. Most of them are going to be fundamentally unable to participate in the emerging economy, the new workforce, over the next 8 to 10 years. We need to grow our community colleges. They need to grow in partnership with our universities. In fact, I think the partnerships that we have with community colleges have never been stronger. They've actually been blossoming over this last year during this year of stability. Monty Sullivan, the president of the community college system, and I talk almost every day. Couldn't be closer partners. It's going to take all of us to achieve this challenge in front of us.
Okay, here's a question. Thank you, Stuart. From Dwight, asking about funding for athletics. Unlike LSU, the schools in the UL system are not self-sustaining. It costs several million dollars for athletics at these universities. Is it worth the investment?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look, if you just want to look at an example, look at University of Alabama, Birmingham, where they decided to discontinue football a couple of years ago and realized what a disastrous decision that was. When you look on the books, it looks like these programs are expensive. But when you consider that most of the expense is associated with scholarships, and those scholarships are not necessarily a cost. It's just a book expense that you have to put down on serving those students. Most of these athletic programs, when it comes to generating students that come in, about two-thirds of students are not on full scholarships or having to pay their own way. It is a financial disaster to try to do away with some of these programs. I tell you, I looked at it. I was on his side of the argument when I got to Northwestern State. It took me about a week and a half to realize, okay, wait a second. This would be shooting ourselves in the foot. So we need to be very stewards. We need to be great stewards of our resources when it comes to athletics. But athletics have a very positive return on investment.
Well, we started talking about Northwestern. And for those unfamiliar, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame is on the campus of Northwestern. And it is quite a showplace.
Beautiful, beautiful architectural building in the historic district of Natchitoches. It is. If you have not been to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, you're missing out. It is absolutely an amazing facility. Then you see some amazing stories of students, you know, or of student athletes. You know, Terry Bradshaw, Coach Rob, Eddie Robinson from Grambling, and go on and on and on. And look at these great stories that exist that came from athletics at our institutions. I tell you, I've been there at least a dozen times. I could go a dozen more before I'd see everything.
Well, thank you, Jim Henderson. Good luck. Tomorrow with ULS Day at the Capitol, starting at 11 o'clock, and good luck with your job. Are you optimistic about funding with this fiscal cliff in the offing now 2 months and 20 days away?
I am optimistic that our story will win the day, that our students are worthy of our investment. We've got to fulfill the TOPS promise. We've got to hold stability for our finances and our institutions. We're going to be successful. It means Louisiana is going to be successful.
Thank you, and we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.